From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Representative Frank Eiler has served North Carolina's House District 17 for 4.5 terms. He is now seeking his fifth. The district includes most of Brunswick County, about 72% of it. The remainder of Brunswick County joins about a quarter of neighboring New Hanover County to make up House District 18, which is served by Democratic Representative Deb Butler. Representative Frank Eiler, a Republican, has worked as a cost accountant and budget supervisor in the textile industry. He has owned a fast food franchise, and he's worked in sales and marketing. He now chairs the Transportation Committee, the House Select Committee on North Carolina River Quality, the Appropriations Transportation Committee, and the Joint Legislative Transportation Oversight Committee. He is facing Democratic challenger Tom Simmons this year, who will join us in the second segment. Frank Eiler, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Today's interviews are pre-recorded, which means we are not taking live calls or emails. Frank Eiler, let's first talk about the political climate we're facing now. After the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, we heard the term broken used frequently, describing not just the process to appoint a Supreme Court justice, but multiple components of government. Where do you think the public conversation stands now? Is the political process broken?
I have a concern that people confuse Washington and Raleigh. We get a lot of things done in Raleigh. Last week, we passed two bills to take care of the school calendar, teachers' pay when all those missed days, 20 or more missed days in Brunswick County, and the start paying for infrastructure and repairs. So that was 109-0 in the House, 46-0 in the Senate.
Has that ever happened in your 4.5 terms?
Oh, yes. We particularly if we have, like, local bills, Representative Butler and I, who you mentioned, we work together for Brunswick County, and she's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, and a lot of local bills, our colleagues trust us that we know what's best, so they'll vote unanimously for our local bills sometimes.
What do you think is different about that? Why is it different in Raleigh than it is in Washington?
I believe we're closer to, I guess, fewer people. you can see your congressman at the grocery store, but you may have to be up in Johnson County or in Wilmington, probably. You can see me at the grocery store or gas station in Brunswick County, right close to us. And Representative Butler and I get to see each other down here around Brunswick County, around Wilmington. And we have to work together. And right now, the whole state is getting behind the southeastern part of the state as far as hurricane recovery, which everybody keeps asking, what's your top priority? Well, it just changed after the hurricane. That's now hurricane recovery, then education, then transportation, and so forth. So that's huge, and it's going to continue next week. We're going to get back together, have a lot better assessment of what the needs are, and we do have a $2 billion rainy day fund, which we didn't have when we came into the majority, and that's going to predict a big portion that's going to be used. The agricultural losses are huge. The transportation infrastructure losses are huge. So it's going to be a lot of funds will have to be spent to bring things back.
As chairman of the House Select Committee on River Quality, what would you say this committee has accomplished over the last year?
Well, so far we have directed money to the university system where they do research on this sort of thing to supplement what DEQ, formerly known as DENR, supplement what they had. Said, well, you should have given the $3 million to DEQ. Well, their budget was already $228 million if they couldn't do the job. You know, the job we're talking about is Gen X. If they couldn't do the job of $228 million, why is $3 million going to make a difference? So we gave it to the collaboratory, I believe they call it, at UNC Chapel Hill and UNCW. And
and what will come out of that? What are you expecting from that?
I think we do a higher quality of testing. They work closer with our utilities, I believe, that have to actually clean the water. Cape Fear Public Utilities as well as the Brunswick County plants.
The criticism about that is that Governor Cooper's proposal was trying to add jobs to the Department of Environmental Quality, formerly DENR. And we know that agency has been cut since 2010. He was trying to add more jobs so that there would be more staff to, in part, test water supplies and also act in a regulatory capacity. So how can you defend cutting that budget for that agency in a time when regulatory oversight seems more important than ever?
Well, we disagree it's been cut if you look at all the budgets we've done, but there were more unfilled jobs than were needed to take care of the jobs that he was asking for. I mean, there was like 47 unfilled jobs. That was the number that sticks in my mind. This has been a few months since we concentrated on this, but I think we'll follow up what's already been done, which the Gen X concentrations are way down, as you may know, single digits in Brunswick County per trillion. So, again, I think we'll be able to follow up and see what they found. And we're not concerned just about Gen X. We're talking about emerging contaminants. That's the term we've been using, emerging contaminants. We know what we know. We don't know what we don't know. In other words, we want to know what's being what's coming up that they may not be looking for, but it might not be healthy. You know?
A lot of the discussion around Gen X has to do with holding Chemours accountable for some of the costs associated with not just water treatment that's required, but some of the mitigation. Will Chemours be held accountable, and can the state legislature do anything along those lines?
Well, last January, when we started meeting seriously on this with the committee you just mentioned, the DEQ said they had people on site at Chemours making sure they were now meeting the standards that they're supposed to be meeting. That was, 10 months ago. And so I think they have been on the ball since then. I think that's very helpful because actually the water coming into the Brunswick plant in recent months has been as safe, apparently, as the water going out. It's like 8 parts per trillion or some single-digit number like that. So I believe the quality of the water coming in is actually a safe level at this point in time. People may not be hearing that, but that's a result of Chemours being under control by DEQ. And we actually passed a law this year giving the governor the right to shut them down if they didn't. And it's one thing we can agree on. We don't like to go around shutting down businesses and costing jobs, but he can do it if we need to.
And as you say, Gen X is only one of those emerging compounds in the drinking water supply. We don't know what we don't know. And we've heard scientists say that Gen X is just a fraction of a percentage of the chemical cocktail that's actually in the water.
Yeah, I mean, compounds in the universe, I mean, there's tens of thousands of different compounds in the universe, and anything can get into the water, basically. And every time we have a meeting, we have enough information that scares the, you know, what out of us, and we just say, okay, we're going to control everything we can and make it as healthy as possible, but, you know, and try to stay on top of it. And we did provide a lot of money for this. Apparently, I thought this machine they used to analyze the chemicals was what they already had. Well, now I know there are generations of those machines.
You're talking about the mass spectrometer.
Mass spectrometer, yes. It slipped my mind for a second. And I've heard like a longer name used too. But anyway, the mass spectrometer, there are different generations. And they're different, and the more thorough they are, I guess is a good word, not a scientific word, but the more thorough they are, the more expensive they are. So we finally allocated enough money for one of the most expensive machines to be used. And there are universities and so forth do have some of those machines, but they were not the top of the line, you might say.
Okay. And talking about elements that no one can control, Hurricane Florence. So certainly you talked about reconvening next week to look at further aid, particularly for farmers and people who were hit hard in terms of their livelihoods. Hurricane Florence also dumped a lot of waste in the form of coal ash and hog waste from lagoons into the waterways. Is that something that your committee on North Carolina river quality is going to take a look at? Has anyone said, as these weather events become more frequent, we need to look at how hog waste is managed, for instance?
Actually, we've been looking at how hog waste is managed for years, and I think the numbers I heard, I believe there were 3,300 lagoons, and we had problems with either 6 or 11. I've heard two different numbers. That's a pretty small number. And a lot of the problems involve water coming in, not so much bad stuff going out and the waste going out. But, again, they had just a very few breaches compared to the number of lagoons there are. A lot of farmers have really made a lot of improvements, and we hope that will continue to where there's no breaches ever. But
what kinds of improvements have been made to hog lagoons?
I'm not an expert on that. I know they've got liners, and they've got requirements. They've got to be so far from water sources, and just all kinds of elevations that they've got to use so the water doesn't get in or waste doesn't get out. There's all kinds of requirements that have been put in that farmers the vast majority have used those and are not having problems.
So is it fair to say then that the North Carolina Select Committee on River Quality, I'm not sure if I'm putting all the words in the right order there, but the River Quality Committee in the House is focused mostly on emerging compounds, and it's not focused on things like potential contaminants from CAFOs or other kinds of agricultural operations?
We're always concerned about what's in the water, regardless of where it comes from. The agricultural part has been a topic for 5, 6, 7 years since I became aware of it. And we got in the majority, and Representative Dixon from up here in Duplin County and others have been real leaders in requiring farmers and agricultural community to do the things they need to do without just shutting them down. So he's been a calming voice, I think, to all of us on that, and also has authored a lot of legislation that is well accepted by almost everyone.
Switching gears to health care, more and more states have taken a look at the expansion of Medicaid health coverage, and a new study just came out from Georgetown University Center for Children and Families, along with the University of North Carolina's North Carolina Rural Health Project. And in the study, they found residents of small towns and rural areas have the most to gain if Medicaid coverage is expanded, and it would significantly reduce the rates of people who are uninsured. Is that something the state legislature would consider?
We have. We've looked at it year after year, how to expand Medicaid. During the ACA or Obamacare years, the last few years, it expanded on its own. And actually, it was billions of dollars being spent more each year until recently. It finally plateaued. I think it's $3.5 billion, where before Obamacare, it was like $1.5 billion Medicaid cost the state each year. So now we feel like it has expanded. What we didn't do is expand the income level at which you would qualify. In fact, I think I would have qualified if we'd expand the income level. I'd like to have free health care, too, like everybody else. I mean, everybody wants it free. There's, who's going to pay for it?
So at this point, you're saying it's been looked at. That's a closed issue from where you sit.
That issue is never closed. Health care will never be a closed issue. We have people that concentrate on that daily in the legislature, and we do have to trust our colleagues. They trust some of us on transportation and a little bit on education. I trust people on health care, Dr. Greg Murphy and others that have taken, and a former hospital administrator, Donnie Lambeth. Some of our representatives know a lot about health care, more than some of the rest of us do, and we trust them to come up and explain good bills to us when we have a good bill. And that's a tricky subject. There have been some stops and starts on managed care organizations, MCOs, and you know, how those are supposed to work, and changing that every year, every session. We make a few changes to try to perfect that, and it'll never be perfect. It's like playing golf, you know.
You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. North Carolina House District 17 includes most of Brunswick County. Representative Frank Eiler has served that district for 4.5 terms, and he is seeking his fifth term. Today's discussion is not live, and so we are not taking listener questions today. You are also chairman of the Appropriations Transportation Committee. What are the priorities in the coming years?
Our priorities have been on making a true transportation budget, not just a highway budget. We look at rail, we look at the ports, we look at ferries, we look at all facets of transportation. The priorities are going to continue to be on expanding that to not only make less congestion and more safety for our people on the highways, but also to provide infrastructure for jobs. I mean, look not just passenger highways or passenger rail, but what it does for freight. You know, freight rail and like freight rail to the ports is a huge need. And the costs are huge also. There's one idea of bringing the railroad across the river to the Wilmington port instead of going through 33 grade crossings around Wilmington. I'm sure that was outside of Wilmington when it was built, but now it's right in Wilmington, and Ms. Laura Padgett has been active in trying to get that pushed along. And, nothing happens fast, but unless you start talking about it, it'll never happen. So she's been very, very good in keeping us informed on that. And we're looking to how in the future we can accomplish that type of thing. The Morehead City Port needs better highways and rail. It's all about jobs and making our ports more viable. They aren't the biggest ports in the world, but they do a great job as far as turnaround, truck time turnaround, and ship turnaround, and they have a decent market that they're
Brunswick County is the fastest growing county in the state. We know that. That's been true for several years now. Are there any transportation projects that will specifically benefit Brunswick County, such as another crossing over the Cape Fear River between New Hanover and Brunswick counties?
Well, we thought about building a wall across at the river so that the growth would slow down a little bit, but that hasn't gone very far.
Just to be 100% clear, that's tongue-in-cheek.
Yes, yes. I have to throw in a little sarcasm every now and then. It wouldn't be me if I did. Yes, the growth that we've experienced, we need not only growth for commerce and take care of the people we have, future commerce and all, but we need access, say, to South Carolina. The Carolina Bays Parkway has been discussed since 2006, and it's not off the ground yet. South Carolina is ready, and we need to get on the ball and figure out how to pay for that. It doesn't score well on the priority system. So we've got to figure out how to make that happen. It'll be a similar project to I-140, which has been terrific. As far as I know, Leland doesn't love being bypassed, but that's, it's helpful for the rest of us to get to the middle of the county and down to where we live. And people going to the Myrtle Beach area, they really appreciate that 10 or 15 minutes they can save and the congestion and all that.
How will the Carolina Bays project positively impact Brunswick County?
Well, it'll give not only access to people, coming from Myrtle Beach area or from South Carolina or from the commerce, getting to the port. People go to Charleston. What if they get to our port quicker, from the Myrtle Beach area or get from the port down to Myrtle Beach? But it'll benefit people both ways, I think. People are already in that corner of the county, shop in Myrtle Beach, and do other things. And they buy gas, and I tell them every time they buy gas in South Carolina, they're building roads in South Carolina. They need to buy gas in North Carolina and build roads up here. But that's just me with the fuel tax. Yeah.
Is it true that last election cycle, this would have been 2016, you changed your position on offshore oil and gas exploration?
I changed my position. I don't think I've ever changed my position.
What is your position on that issue?
It's not – I don't have both feet on any side of a fence, okay? And you may say I'm on the fence, but let me explain. It's a national issue to start with. Secondly, the type of testing is being described is been done for years. NOAA and other organizations mapping the ocean floor have done testing at least as strong, if not stronger, than what they're talking about, they being the folks against sonic testing. It is likely we're going to find natural gas and not oil. To use one oil spill out of 10,000 oil wells in the Gulf, or to use the Valdez, we have tankers offshore now. So, I mean, the Valdez was the biggest spill probably in the world. Up in Alaska, and that's from a tanker. So some of the arguments on both sides are fairly extreme, and I just don't choose to jump in the middle of that because it may never happen in our lifetimes or our children's, and if it does, it might be natural gas. And finally, it's a national security issue. You say, well, we're exporting energy. Well, that sounds good, except we need to export more so that Russia doesn't corner the market or China. It's an economic and national security. I mean, if somehow we have a problem with our energy supply and get into a international crisis like a war or whatever, I think we might have problems.
So what are Brunswick County residents supposed to make of whether you will lobby for or against such activity off the North Carolina coast?
I'll have to leave that up to them. I have got many letters and emails saying the economic impact will be tremendous, and they support it. And I've gotten probably an equal number. Actually, more of the folks against offshore drilling have gone to town councils and gotten resolutions instead of coming to me, you know, and maybe they already know my position. I don't know. I'm not for rushing it, and I'm not against it. So I'm not jumping on both either extreme in that question. I think there are common sense reasons for or against. I'm for clean beaches. I'm for preserving our beaches. A lot of folks that are against that are also against doing things to protect our inlets and our beaches. You're putting sand on the beach or...
You're talking about people being against, say, terminal groins,
terminal groins is the term that a lot of people don't understand what that is. It's not quite like a jetty, but it's similar. And it actually is a pile of rocks going out in beside an inlet to protect the inlet and protect the beach sand.
There has been consistency, though, across the political spectrum when it comes to coastal stakeholders versus people who are more inland. I think it's a fair characterization to say that the majority of coastal stakeholders have come out in opposition to offshore oil and gas, regardless of their political affiliation.
I would say they're more vocal. I'm not sure that more of them come out. I get more actual written letters in support at this point in time. Now, after this show airs, I may get more written letters on the other side. But
and are those written letters coming from your constituents or other interests?
No, they're coming from the constituents. They're not all the same. A lot of the emails I get 200 the same, and they've got somebody's email, and they're sending out their agenda or their position. And that's more on that side that you're talking about. I'm trying to criticize either side, but I get more canned emails. I get more agitation, you might say, and the town councils do, and the board of commissioners gets more agitation from that side and more vocal and vociferous vocal sometimes.
And we have just a minute or so. I want to get to teacher pay because this is something that we've watched come up over the last few years. But when we speak to candidates who are running for re-election to the school board or challengers, one of the things we hear across the board is we still need more money to attract the best and keep the best teachers. What do you say to that as a state legislator?
Well, everybody in Brunswick County that's been listening knows I'm an advocate for teacher pay. I'm an advocate for the teaching fellows, which went away, and we're kind of slowly bringing it back. That would have trained teachers at no cost for college, to stay in North Carolina, and also for local control. We do have an issue when it comes to school calendar. We don't want the tourist season to disappear. But the teachers know I'm an advocate and teacher assistants. I've been very vocal on that.
And so you'll push next session for more teacher pay? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, people say that, act like I haven't been. We've been increasing teacher pay for the last 5 years, and in many cases, fairly well.
Representative Frank Eiler, sorry, that's our time. That's the music. Thanks for taking the time to share your views today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're meeting the two candidates for North Carolina's House District 17 in Brunswick County. When we return from this break, we'll hear from Democratic challenger Tom Simmons. Today's discussion is pre-recorded. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. North Carolina's House District 17 covers most of Brunswick County. Republican Frank Eiler has represented the district since mid-2009, when he was appointed to replace Bonner Stiller, who was retiring. The last four elections have seen Eiler consistently beat his Democratic challenger with between 66 and 68% of the vote. This year, he faces Democrat Tom Simmons, a more than 40-year resident of Brunswick County. Simmons spent 30 years working as a classroom teacher, assistant principal, and principal at the elementary, middle, and high school levels in southeastern North Carolina. He later served and still serves as the vice president of education for the Boys and Girls Home of North Carolina. And he joins us now. Tom Simmons, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. This conversation is pre-recorded, and so we are not taking live listener questions today. Tom Simmons, as a way of getting to know you, you're pretty open about your traumatic childhood and why that led you to the Boys and Girls Club and ultimately a career in education. So tell us first, why did you run away from home when you were a child?
I was in a very dysfunctional family. Had an abusive father and an older sibling that would occasionally sexually assault me. And I just felt safer living on the streets than at home, where all 10-year-old children should be.
You were 10 years old when
yes.
you ran away?
Yes. But I became the luckiest unlucky kid you probably could ever meet. Unlucky because my dysfunctional family put me in the situation I was in, but lucky because there was a place called Boys Home of North Carolina. At Boys Home, I learned three things. The first thing I learned was that I didn't have to be afraid. And the second was that there was somebody that cared for me. And the third thing, and the most important, was that an education would just open up doors of opportunities for me that I just never knew existed. And I'm just proud to know that that kid that was running away living on the streets is today asking folks to vote for him for the North Carolina House of Representatives.
How did you go from being on the streets at 10 years old to getting into the boys' home?
An aunt came looking for me because she had found out that I'd ran away. Oddly enough, she was the only person in my family to come look for me. She found me. At that time, the USS Coast Guard Mendota docked here, and I used to hang out down there a lot. And they kind of told her that they would look out. When they spotted me, they'd let her know. And she had just heard a boy's home. It had just opened, and I was the seventh boy to actually take up residence at Lake Waccamaw. When I got there, I was told, you could stay a week, and if you don't like it, you can go back home. And I said to the director at the time, you're going to be glad to get rid of me because I'm going to bust everyone in this place out. And he put his big arms around me, and he said, you better get started, young man. There's a lot of windows. Well, a week later, my aunt came back to pick me up, and I decided this is where I want to stay. And it's been home for the last 60 years.
And you are still working there
yes.
as vice president of education. Tell us what that job involves.
We have a charter school on the campus of Boys and Girls Homes. And so my job is to be a liaison with the school, with the State Department of Public Instruction, to just go out and be a PR person for the school. We take kids from the communities, too. Matter of fact, we have more kids from the surrounding communities than we have residents of Boys and Girls Homes.
Are you seeing a greater need these days because of the spike in the opioid epidemic?
We are. I wish, and I say this to groups that I talk to all over the state, I wish that we were working ourselves out of a job, but we're not. It's getting worse.
So how, in light of that and in light of the importance of that role in the community, how will you find time, if you are elected, to go to Raleigh?
That's the hard part. I know that once I'm elected, I'm going to have to take a kind of a back seat to my duties, because I will be working for the entire state. But even while I'm in Raleigh, I'll be thinking about how I can get Boys Home's message out across the state and how I can continue to serve Boys Home. But I'm going to have to resign from my position as vice president. I can't do both those things at the same time.
What was it then about running for this seat in the North Carolina House that really compelled you? Why did you say, I need to be a state legislator?
I think it's my deep compassion for kids. And I see the road that our legislature is going down in the attack on public education, in not expanding Medicaid. We have so many children, over 10,000 children, that can't see a doctor. And that's wrong. North Carolina's better than that. We're playing around with letting politicians pick judges, and that's just a slippery slope that we don't want to go down. I think that we need people in Raleigh, and I'm one of those Democrats that you won't hear say this very often, but I think we need people in Raleigh that will listen to the Republican side and will sit down with the Republicans and say, I like this part of your plan, but here's an idea that I'd like to work into your plan. I don't think that either party has all the right answers. But I do believe that if we start working together and doing what's right for the people, we can make North Carolina a better place.
Well, talking about the political climate, particularly after the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, we hear the term broken used a lot in terms of not just the process to appoint a Supreme Court justice, but many different elements of government at all levels. Do you think the process is broken? How would you characterize it, and how would you see your role in terms of making it work a little bit better?
I don't think it's broken. You don't break a democracy. You can slow a democracy down, and I think that's why we've gotten into this dark political side, where we're letting big donors call the shots. And we need to get a grasp on it. We need to figure out some way that we can have political campaigns without spending millions of dollars. I was shocked when I was told by the caucus in Raleigh how much money I need to raise to run for this position. And it's just too much money to be spent. I'm not taking any campaign money from political PACs, corporate PACs, because I want to be a representative of the people and not representative of big corporations.
Your opponent, Republican incumbent Frank Eiler, calls himself a champion of education and points out that the state legislature has tried to build up, for instance, teacher salaries over the last several years. And it is true that teacher salaries have inched up. They're still not where they need to be, and North Carolina certainly isn't considered one of the more favorable places to work as a teacher. But what would you do differently than, say, Frank Eiler, who already has got a lot of power in his position?
Well, first of all, let me say that the raises that you're talking about is from money that they were getting, teachers were getting in their higher degree salaries, their master's degree pay. They eliminated that. And then their longevity pay, they eliminated that. So it's giving you a pay raise of money you were already getting. So it's not really a pay raise. When you talk about the average teacher in North Carolina is making $50,000, that's not true. Those teachers that are at the higher end of scale, maybe so. But when you talk about the pay raises that they gave, those teachers at the beginning of the salary, those teachers at the end of the salary scale, they got zero. The people in the middle got the big pay raise. I think that we need to look at how we fund our schools. I think we need to look at better ways to stretch that dollar and make that dollar go farther so that we can. And I totally agree with the thing about let's get it at the national average. But I want to go above the national average because I believe if North Carolina can say we're going to pay teachers above the national average. We can attract and keep the best and the brightest in the classrooms, and that's what we've got to do.
Tell us about your experience working in the school system as an assistant principal and then a principal. What did you learn about the public school system that you think legislators don't understand?
First of all, the complexity of it. And then teachers have an enormous task. They come into their classroom in the day, and they're greeting 28 to 30 kids. They don't know what those kids are bringing into the classrooms. They don't know if they have a Tom Simmons in their classroom who was beaten last night, who or was sexually assaulted last night. And so when a child is disruptive, there's a reason behind it. They have to be educator. They have to be psychologists. In some cases, they even have to be parents of those children. I think that what we need to do, and this is something that I've talked about for years, is that we need to put trained mental health care workers in those K-3 grades. Because if we can find these children that have these emotional problems and these behavior problems when they're young, we can help solve these problems. But if we wait till they're at 8th grade, 9th grade, it may be too late. So I think one of the things we need to do is we need to fund better those resources for helping these younger children and get these children in school as soon as we can. We need to open up pre-K so that more of these children can get into the classrooms, so that more of these children can get the help they need, and work with the parents, too, to help those parents understand that they have a crucial role in this whole thing.
School safety has a lot of prongs. There are a lot of elements to that idea, and certainly some school districts are already undergoing building redesigns to contribute to that, infrastructure changes. What do you think about the primary elements of school safety? And if you didn't have to build consensus and could just lay out a plan, what would that plan be?
Well, first of all, I think that to talk about Army teachers with weapons is just a ridiculous thing to say.
Why?
Well, teachers already have enough to do already. And then to put a loaded weapon in the classroom, how does that teacher protect that weapon? How does that teacher make sure that no one else gets their hands on that weapon? And then if something were to happen, how can we be sure that this teacher doesn't get excited and make a mistake? So I think that's off the table to start with. I think that we do need to have more parent input into the schools. We need to invite parents in. When parents come into schools, we don't need to talk education ease with them. We need to talk with them as parents, explain to them what we're there for and why we need them in the schools, and make them feel welcome in our schools.
You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. North Carolina House District 17 includes most of Brunswick County. Tom Simmons, a Democrat, is challenging 4.5-term Republican Representative Frank Eiler this year. Today's discussion is not live, so we're not able to take listener questions. Drinking water quality is a primary issue for the Cape Fear region, both from industrial emissions such as unregulated compounds like Gen X, which is produced by Chemours in Fayetteville, to waste from hog lagoons and coal ash after severe weather events like Hurricane Florence. What do you think needs to happen so that constituents in southeastern North Carolina have clean drinking water?
Well, first of all, I think that the legislature, it's time for them to stand up and say that if you knowingly put pollutants into our air, our land, our water, and you do it deliberately, we're going to shut you down until you can get it done right. That's the thing that we need to say to folks, that's how we're going to protect you. To slap Duke Power on the wrist with a $500,000 fine, that's a coffee break for those folks. But I think if you get them where the shareholders hurt and you say to them, we're going to pull your permits until you get it right, and people say, well, you're going to cost jobs. I don't think Chemours is going to close down a $100 billion company just because they got to spend $100 million in filtering the pollutants they're putting into the water.
But they weren't regulated. So the state legislature didn't necessarily have the teeth.
Because they defunded Department of Environmental Quality. We need to put money back into that division so they can get out and monitor these companies and make sure they're and we can regulate them to make sure.
So you think that the state then should have put regulations in place for a compound like Gen X when the federal government has not yet established regulations for that?
Well, and there is another reason that we're in the shape we're in, because of the Hardison rule. The Hardison rule says that North Carolina, no county in North Carolina, can impose harsher regulations than the EPA. That's ridiculous. If we want to impose regulations to protect our people, we should be allowed to do it. So one of the first things I'd like to do is just get rid of the Hardison rule. So that then we could put some teeth into the DEQ and they could do their job.
Your opponent is chairman of the House Select Committee on River Quality. How do you think, if you were elected and you displaced him, how would you be able to get more done along those lines than someone who's already in that position?
Well, I don't know how to say that I get, to start with, I would get more done, but I would certainly sit down with folks, find out some better issues, some better answers, some ways that we can monitor the river, the way we can monitor the companies. For instance, I think that it's the hog lagoon situation. I'm not against the hog farmers. I am absolutely not. It's the big corporate companies that control the hog farmers. You shouldn't put a $50,000 hog lagoon in a residential area where, I mean, there's other places to do that. And then there's ways to protect and treat that waste from those hog lagoons. And that's what we got to go after. We've got to go after the big companies that are just telling the hog farmers, this is the way you're going to do it. I want to support the hog farmers because they need to make a living too. But I want to say to these big corporations, if you're going to operate in North Carolina, you're going to do it better.
It sounds like you're talking about stronger state regulation of some of these big companies.
Yes,
and of course, you know, one side of that is hog farming is a huge part of North Carolina's agricultural economy. And right now, North Carolina ranks 9th among the 50 states for fiscal health. That's according to a new study out of a study center at George Mason University. And this study ranks the states by fiscal condition. That's actually the title of the study. So given that North Carolina is beating out 41 other states, how then would you go in and start adding more regulations and possibly chasing some of these larger companies out of the state? Would that be a concern?
Well, it would be, and that's why I said it's important to bring all the stakeholders together so that we can talk about the issues, so we can find some consensus, a way to improve what we're already doing.
Every time someone goes to Raleigh for the first time, there's a pretty steep learning curve. Have you already embarked on some of that learning curve? And how would you educate yourself about how things work in Raleigh and the most efficient way to get things done?
Well, I think in just talking with legislators that are already there, both Republican and Democrat, it is a steep learning curve. And probably the first 6 months you're there, you're just going to be finding your way around the halls. If you've ever been in that building, it's a confusing maze anyway. But again, I think that you find those legislators that that seem to be there for the right reasons and not for political gains. You sit down with those legislators on both sides of the aisle, and you find out how you can be an effective force. What is you can do with your talents and with the help of other folks to make you an effective legislator. And that's why I'm running for this office, because I want to do the right things for North Carolina, but I want to do them right.
Hurricane Florence has raised some questions that have yet to be fully fleshed out. In fact, during one of the media briefings during the storm, Governor Roy Cooper talked about the fact that Hurricane Florence is highlighting the issue of affordable housing in the state of North Carolina. And we're really starting to see that unfold now as people get pushed out of buildings that have been condemned. Where do you think the issue of affordable housing needs to go in the state? Is there anything state legislators can do to help facilitate that?
I think that state legislators can look at how they can help counties develop a program, and whether that's through tax dollars or not, I'm just not sure, but help counties develop a program that can set aside some lands so that affordable housing can be built, whether that's large complexes or just duplex houses. I'm not sure about that, but I know that in just riding around in Brunswick County, in the Snee Farm area, for instance, and in Boiling Spring Lakes, We have folks that are really hurting right now, and we need to do all we can to make affordable housing, not just in Brunswick County, but all over North Carolina, make affordable housing available so that people can, and not just in storm times, but affordable housing for everyone.
The United Nations recently put out a rather alarming climate change report, and it's certainly something that is up for discussion at the federal level. But there is there anything that the state of North Carolina, North Carolina state officials should be doing to contribute to the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, again, I think it goes back to funding of DEQ so that those folks can better monitor what we are putting into the air. There has to be ways that we can reduce that carbon release into the air. I'm not a scientist, so I rely on those people that do know that field. But I think that we have to understand that oceans are getting warmer because we're seeing more and more massive hurricanes and storm changes. And this late in October, and we're still 85 and 90-degree weather, it should tell even the non-science believers that something is happening, and we need to pay attention to that.
You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. North Carolina House District 17 includes most of Brunswick County. Tom Simmons, a Democrat, is challenging four-and-a-half-term Republican Representative Frank Eiler this year, and this conversation is pre-recorded. There are a number of constitutional amendments that are proposed that will be on the ballot this November. And at this point, we've heard anecdotally from listeners that there isn't a great deal of understanding out there about what those are. One of those proposed amendments would reduce the maximum allowable tax rate to 7%. Is this an amendment that you support?
No, ma'am.
Why not?
Well, it sounds good on paper that we're going to reduce it to 7%, but when you have a disaster like we've just gone through, who pays for that? The counties do. The cities do. They can't afford it. We've got to have that help from the state. So we need that tax rate as low as we can make it, but I think that when we're getting down into the 7% and 5%, we're going to put a burden on the counties and cities that they just can't afford, and it's going to hurt the lower-income folks more than anyone else.
There are other amendments on the ballot, including a question about voter ID. And that's another one that, on the surface, a lot of people will read the question and say, absolutely, why shouldn't people be forced to present a photo ID when they go to the polls? I understand that you, again, would not support that amendment. Why not?
Well, I think that if you're looking at fraud in North Carolina, I think that in the last election there were less than 10 proven cases of fraud. I'm just afraid that if this amendment passes, that down the road, if the majority party stays in power, there's going to be one ID. And I see that one ID being the North Carolina True ID. And if you don't have that one, you're probably not going to be able to vote. That's my worry. I don't have any proof of that, but that's my worry. Also, I just think that you don't mess around with the Constitution if it doesn't need to be messed around with. That's how you get into a lot of trouble.
Another amendment takes a look at hunting and fishing. And you're smiling about that. Why? Tell us about your reaction.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. Number one, it is telling people that if you don't pass this amendment, we're going to take your guns away. It has nothing to do with taking guns away. The other thing I think it is just to energize the base, to get the base out to vote. You know, and I said this jokingly, if this constitutional amendment passes, does that mean I can hunt on Sunday? Can I catch as many red drum as I want to catch? Do I even have to have a hunting license if it's my constitutional right? So, I just think that it's a ridiculous amendment. Everybody has a right to hunt. There's no doubt about that.
Offshore drilling is a looming issue for the Mid-Atlantic region, which includes the North Carolina offshore area. What's your position on that?
I strongly oppose it.
Why?
We are in Brunswick County, New Iver County, all down this coastline. We are in a very fragile, pristine area. If we have a Category 2 or 3 hurricane, the property values in Brunswick County last year had $500 million tourist dollars coming to our county. One oil spill, and that's gone. We can't afford that. we just need to say that the North Carolina coast is not open for sale, and we're not going to have it.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Tom Simmons, thanks for joining us today and sharing your views.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks also to Frank Eiler. Voter registration is open until October 15th. Early voting begins October 17th. Election day is November 6th. Coastline's technical producer is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Thank you.